Hello and welcome to Straight Talk. I'm Tim Gordon. It's no secret that starting and running a business in Oregon can be a tough process to navigate. CNBC's most recent report on America's top states for business shows Oregon, not at the top, actually ranked 39th out of 50 states. In an effort to address the underlying issues driving this trend, Governor Tina Kotek launched a Prosperity Council. It consists of 15 members that are meant to represent different regions, industries, and labor interests. Since its creation in January, the council has met to put together a set of recommendations with the goal of bolstering the state's economy, accelerating job creation, and enticing new business to Oregon while supporting existing ones. The council officially presented their finalized set of recommendations earlier today. And joining us to break down that final report is Prosperity Council co-chair Renee James. James is the founder and former chair of Ampere Computing, a semiconductor company that's headquartered in Santa Clara with a major office in Portland's Pearl District. She previously had a long tenure at Intel, serving in various roles, including as its president. James currently serves on the board of directors for Portland General Electric and is on the board of trustees for the University of Oregon. We're also joined by the other co-chair of the council, Curtis Robinhold. Robinhold was appointed executive director for the Port of Portland in 2017. He also serves as the vice chair of Oregon Public Broadcasting's board of directors. Before joining the port, Robinhold served as chief of staff to former Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber. Thank you both for being here. We really appreciate your time.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Now we'll get right to the questions. You know, back in January, it wasn't that long ago, really, the governor asked you to take a hard look at Oregon's economic situation and its future. In your executive summary, you say Oregon is at a critical inflection point, and you urge the governor and legislature to act quickly on your recommendations. Renee, I'm going to start with you. Are we in an economic emergency in Oregon?
I don't think we're in an emergency today. I think we're heading into a challenge that requires immediate action to stem the tide of the things that we see directionally and to get us moving in the right direction. When you start to see slower growth and, you know, a higher unemployment rate than the national average, and lack of job creation, you have to ask yourself, okay, are we going in the right direction? Are we headed towards a bigger crisis? So that's really why we think the recommendations that we're going to talk through, Curtis and I, today, we think there's a lot of them that are quite immediate that the governor can take immediate action and will help mitigate the situation.
And you're urging her to do that and get the legislature on board in 2027,
yes.
A long session. Curtis, you spent 6 months traveling the state as well as meeting as a group. What did you hear from ordinary Oregonians, not just business owners? What did you hear from them, including something maybe that you didn't expect to hear?
You know, Tim, it was a lot of fun, honestly. It was really interesting to get out there and talk to people in Pendleton or Astoria. We were all over the state. And I think most striking, north, south, east, and west, is really this sense that things are not okay. That the business climate is not friendly. You spoke a little to it in your open. People are feeling frustrated with regulation that stacks on itself, tax codes that make it a not great place to be a small business or even medium and low income folks finding it hard to get by. And that just sort of led us to ask questions about, well, what could we change? Not how would we revolutionize the state, but really what steps could we start to take that would be pragmatic and meaningful. And I think we were both struck, and our council was struck around the state. People love it here. They want to be here. And they just really want the opportunity to grow and to have a job that's meaningful and can put food on the table, but also to have opportunities to start businesses and to grow them, not just to grow them and move them out of state, but to grow them and keep them here. And so it was a really exciting opportunity to meet with folks and talk in a real way.
Yeah, and when those businesses do well, then Oregonians do well who work for those businesses, and hopefully pay comes up and the other issues that 100%. are challenging right now. You know, the report uses some really striking numbers here. 49th in the nation in private sector job growth, unemployment above the national rate, salary growth, as we were just saying, at half the national pace. That's really something. For someone working a regular job in Portland, Medford, or maybe Pendleton, what does that actually mean for their daily lives, Renee?
Well, we included in the report, and hopefully everyone will have an opportunity, even just in the executive summary, the data that shows that it's difficult. And we think that Oregonians are in a situation where they love to stay and work here, but they're doing it at a deficit to our neighboring states. And we're not talking in the report about, you know, states like Texas or Nevada, we're talking about our neighbors to the north and south, and how do we compare? So in the report, you'll see that an income earner, a single income earner in the $50,000 a year, or a family of $80,000 a year, is, you know, can be 2 to 4% higher in their net effective tax than if they lived in Washington state or if they were in California.
Right.
So I think most Oregonians don't realize that the current situation is affecting everyone in Oregon. Tax is a very emotional issue, and we tend to want to focus on, you know, wealthy income brackets, asking for tax breaks, that kind of thing. What we were really focused on in this report were two things. One, how are we competitively as a state, statewide, are we competitive for businesses to come here and grow jobs? And secondly, how are small, medium businesses and entrepreneurs and, you know, medium to lower income wage earners, how are they doing in our state? Are, you know, is it working for them? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah. Yeah, currently, with inflation just bumping up above 4%, all that adds into the mix right now that
right.
make it even tougher. Right?
That's exactly
yeah.
right.
When these stats that we discussed came to people, businesses, I mean, what does that say to a business that's already established in Oregon or one that's maybe looking to set up shop here to have those kind of stats and be where we're at?
You know, Tim, we spend a lot of time around the state, not just meeting with ourselves, but out listening to businesses and getting feedback from Nancy's Yogurt in Eugene or Fort George Brewing in Astoria. We were with manufacturers in Central Oregon, sort of natural resource industries in the Willamette Valley, and they all had a similar reaction. Healthcare costs are way up. They want to keep and retain employees. Inflation is up, and it's just hard for them to get by. So what they've really were asking us is, how can the state help us? How can they make this situation better? I think you put your finger on it. Really, the reason we care about that is because it's people who get those jobs. And when you see a company doing well, it means that the community can do well as well. And, you know, as the state is entering this phase of fewer and fewer dollars on the table and PERS costs and healthcare costs going up, what you really need to think about is how you grow that pie, not just how you battle over a smaller slice. Who gets this little piece of that little piece? It's how do we get more prosperity, and really focusing on low and middle income Oregonians. How do we help them lift up their situation in an era where inflation's really high and in some ways feels very much out of our control?
Well, and we'll get to some of the specifics around that and taxes and stuff in our second half, kind of setting up the general pace right here. But we will speak about regulations and permitting now. You know, you critique Oregon for its complex layers of rules and fees from local to state. I think Multnomah County and Portland in particular get seen as having the worst of this. In April, we featured a new business, a Portland architect and interior designer, who opened a home goods store in Northwest Portland, who barely survived her first year, citing the time and expense of that permitting process, saying it cost her $5,000 just for permitting when she added an upstairs office.
And it was particularly difficult with this very simple build out. So I was pretty frustrated by that because my budget was blown.
A LendingTree report puts Oregon as one of the worst for businesses surviving their first year. Renee, what's the biggest economic challenge here for businesses getting started in the state?
Aside from permitting and availability, which we'll talk about in more detail, those are two very difficult. But if you were just to go out and get office space, there is a regulatory burden of reporting. That the threshold of which is relatively low in Oregon. And so it's not to say that we don't think you should have these kinds of business taxes or et cetera. It's that we have a lot of them. And the threshold for participation is at the, you know, $1 million in revenue. So we do make recommendations about the layering and recommendations about moving the threshold up a little bit so that the smaller and the startup entrepreneurial businesses can get off the ground. Yeah. Because you just start having to participate in so much cost from day one that it actually is prohibitive to reinvest. And in the early days, even if you plan a business to lose money for the first couple of years and you have a budget for it, you want to reinvest anything you can. And these extra layers of permitting and local taxes on business, et cetera, are just they're just really difficult in Oregon.
Yeah. And at the state level, it's one thing, but how do you enforce changes and trying to fix those layers, take them out, Curtis?
Yeah. One of the things, and this is maybe just to double click a little on what Renee is saying, is that this is an ecosystem and these pieces are connected. So if you think about housing availability and housing costs, it drives who's going to come to your market and what you have to pay them. It forces some people further and further away from their employer. And then you get in these transportation questions, right? What does congestion mean? So we were really struck by our focus is really on economic development, but you need to think about the quality of our education. Is our K-12 system good enough for the amount of money we're putting into it? And everyone agrees it's not okay. It's not good enough. Do we have enough housing? We don't. So these things have to move as well, but we were really trying to think about what's the piece that's really about economic development and job creation? And so that's what you'll see in those recommendations. And I'd say there's also hope. We can get at these things. One of the things we try to do in the council is really look at states that do these things well. If you want to think about a look at your tax code, who did that already? If you want to think about regulation, who reduced regulation without sacrificing clean air and clean water and safety? So we really tried to focus on the opportunity that other folks have shown us, and we can take best practice and start moving.
And you looked north and south of Washington and California, our West Coast neighbors, for some of that.
We did, and we looked across the United States as well. I mean, you'll see a lot of examples in here from states, especially on economic development, that do a really fantastic job on the outbound side of attracting business, or when businesses want to grow, they help them through that process of growth, whether it be permitting or land or what have you. So we looked across the entire United States at different examples.
Right.
Interesting, Tim, what we were really struck by is it's not a blue or a red state issue either.
No, it's bipartisan.
You look at North Carolina, that's been red and blue. Or you look at Pennsylvania is a great example. They've done really good work and also red and blue. So it's not a partisan thing. It's more who does this really well and what can we learn?
Maybe some common sense injected in there too. Yeah. Well, we mentioned the recommendations of this council. You have 10 main ones, and we will get to as many as we can in our next segment. But let's end this one on kind of a hopeful note. We know that Oregon has strengths. You point them out in the report. Talk about what Oregon has going for it right now.
Well, this was my favorite part of the report. When we traveled around the state, we heard consistently, we want to be here, we want to stay here, people love to live here. Oregon is a wonderful place, we have a lot of natural resources, but we're really good at some things. We're really good at wood products, we're really good at food and beverage. We have a thriving, you know, wine making and local beer industry. Right. We invented the concept of modern sportswear and sports in general, the ability, you know, fans in Oregon of any sport sells out. We had our first ever professional softball last weekend in Portland, Oregon, sold out all 3 days.
Right.
Sports is such a big part of our culture, outdoor, getting out, fishing, camping, hiking, whatever it is. So we learned a lot about that. Our natural resources are great. We have a lot of clean energy and a lot of available land.
Yeah.
All good things.
Those are all good things.
If you can use any.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the things.
Okay, semiconductors.
Semiconductors. Okay.
Everyone wants me to say semiconductors and AI. Well, yes, we're really good at semiconductors. Yes.
We are the global capital of these things that Renee was just describing. And we just need to grab the ring and run instead of sitting back and sort of crossing our fingers and hope for the best. We need to get busy.
We have to get out of our own way.
There it is. We'll talk about that after the break. Okay, we are going to take a quick break now, and when we continue our conversation, we'll be talking about Oregon Prosperity Council's specific recommendations for revamping Oregon's economy, including changes to the state's tax structure. That's when we come back. And welcome back. We are continuing our conversation about the official recommendations from the Oregon Prosperity Council. We're joined by Council Co-Chairs Renee James and Curtis Robinholt. Thanks again for being here. Appreciate it. And so now we'll talk some specifics here. We're back and it's time to talk those specifics discussing Oregon's economy. This Prosperity Council came up with 10 priority recommendations. And right off the top, you say transform Business Oregon into the Oregon Commerce Authority. This is about the state's economic development agency. This is about more than a name change, obviously, too. Why are we doing this? What's important?
What's important, and I remember that the strategic context for the entire recommendation set is are you competitive? Are we a competitive state? And what we learned through talking not inside, just inside our state, but looking to best practices outside of our state is that other people are doing a much better job of coordinating all of their business assistive groups, if you will. We have a lot going on in Business Oregon. It's not very well coordinated, and it's hard to access and get help. Other states are very well orchestrated. They have an economic agenda. It's organized and bought into by the governor. They meet with private industry, and they have a outbound capacity to go out and land companies into their state. We heard from our own companies, and I invite Curtis to jump in here, in our state that are being courted by other states. Just move. We'll help you do that. And it's not always money. Sometimes it's as simple as we'll get you through the permitting process. We'll help you with the land availability. And if they're going to spend, they're slated to expand their manufacturing anyway. So they've already allocated that money, but it's just easier, right? Yeah. And so I guess, Curtis, I would ask if you want to add anything. This was a big part of the recommendation set.
Right? Yeah, one of the things we heard was that Business Oregon does some good work, especially in small grant programs. Yeah. Around the state, a lot of smaller companies say, we like that piece. What it felt like is you actually need to put more in that. You need to put more focus on economic development. So it might include a connection to workforce. Who are the people that are getting the jobs? How do you help them train up to get in particular work? Or maybe it's about siting and where those jobs can be created, where that company wants to expand. And so it's really about getting more force in your economic development effort rather than making it smaller or changing the name. Just changing the name would be a waste of time and energy. Sure. No one's interested in that.
Is it fair to say that Business Oregon was too splintered? It had too many subgroups of more than 10 kind of operations going on there, and this kind of streamlines it and gives it a more singular purpose?
We definitely heard that it was described to us as cats and dogs. That is not the fault of the folks at Business Oregon, but the legislature over the past 30 or 40 years has thrown all these programs at them that they're forced to administer. Not all of them would have to go away, but you really want more juice in that organization.
And a clear strategic focus for the state. I think that's super important.
Yeah. Renee, you mentioned this in our first segment, but we're going to bring it back on taxes. The report says a single person earning $50,000 pays an effective tax rate of 22% in Oregon versus 18% in Washington. You're recommending a whole host of reforms, but not a sales tax. How do you actually fix this competitiveness gap without that tool?
Yeah, I'm glad that you're asking this because that's one of the favorite topics of everyone when we have tax discussions. The reality is we decided after a lot of discussion with economists, with people around the state, that the most important thing that needs to happen is to ask the governor to convene a bipartisan group to go off and really overhaul the entirety of our tax code in Oregon. And to focus on one aspect of it is actually doing it a disservice.
Sure.
And so we looked at other states who had done it very successfully. It's not a small task to do that. It might not get done in one session, but I think it's at this point, we're not serving the very people that we hope to serve in our, you know, low and medium income Oregonians. So it's more than, is this tax or that tax the right thing? It's what is the right tax approach at this point for this state? And we really think that's probably one of the most important recommendations that we're making. And certainly, everyone had an opinion. And everyone wanted us to make a recommendation on with specificity.
Right.
What we did do is we picked the four things that were competitive issues in tax that we felt the governor had the opportunity to take action on, in addition to please convene and go after the bigger tax code issue.
Yeah.
You want to add anything, Curtis?
That's right. So I think, Tim, the point of these short-term items is work on getting competitive quickly. They're not really big items. They're meaningful, but they'd be really strong signals in the marketplace. And the governor and the legislature could act on those in the 27th session when the legislature gets back together. This bigger question about how you structure your tax code is something, honestly, we weren't qualified to do. We weren't the right group for it, but it needs to happen. It probably needs to happen in the next few years because the federal tax code is changing on
That's
Oregon,
good.
Which will disadvantage us even more in 2029.
Right.
So the idea is we have a few cycles here. We need to get to work and get the right folks together in the room to really think about the outcomes of your tax code.
Right. And there were a few specifics that you talked about, the estate tax and some tax breaks for other business issues. So, but that can all be worked out in the future.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I want to be super clear about this because tax is so polarizing and it's such an emotional issue for people. The recommendations that we made, and you can find these on the governor's website, even the near-in ones are all about entrepreneurial, family-owned businesses, small, medium businesses in Oregon. And they're things that would assist them up to and including estate tax, which is really literally just matching what our neighbors do. And that's very oriented towards a family-owned business in Oregon. So, yes, there are proposals in there. But again, the lens was, are we helping people build and create jobs in Oregon?
Yep. We're going to move on to talking about the $250 million per biennium for site readiness. Is it to create land to build and spur development? Where does that money come from in a budget that's challenged? And also, how does it mesh with development debates like we see happening in Washington County right now with data centers?
Yeah. One of the things we heard around the state really is that folks who want to build in communities have trouble getting the land that's ready to be built on or to be served by utilities and roads. And so, as an example, Fort George Brewing in Astoria, great local brewery, one of the great gems, certainly of the Oregon coast, they would like to expand. And yet the city of Astoria doesn't have the water and sewer to allow them to do so. And so they actually have to look elsewhere for their expansion unless the state can help match that local commitment to build up that infrastructure. So it's really about an incentive to help create some of those new opportunities. The idea of where that would come from is from lottery-backed bonds. They're dedicated to economic development. You'd have to put them in that essentially committed space to help on that infrastructure development space.
We just have a couple minutes left, so I'm going to go with one real quick here, though. You're recommending a market-based cap and invest system that's more of a private sector oriented, as I understand it, and repeals the governor's existing climate protection program. How's that going to work in Oregon? I think a lot of people have concerns about climate and environment, and it's a progressive state.
Yeah, and I think everyone agreed that we need to be doing work on climate. The real question is, what is the mechanism? And the idea is that a rules-based program that's in the agency and run by bureaucrats is not the way to do it. That you should have the legislature get to work on a system that aligns with Washington and California and meets those climate goals.
And could still be environmentally sound.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, look, there's so many good recommendations to talk about, and we invite people to go to our website and check for reading about all of them. But as we kind of wrap things up here, you talk about urgency here. What do you think the governor and legislature, though, can actually accomplish in 2027?
I mean, the recommendations are written to be actionable immediately. So I think even the things that we ask for a convening, like tax and some of the other changes, we believe that all those things are, there are some near-term things the governor could act on immediately. There's some 27 proposals in here that we'd like the legislature to take up. And then there's the longer term that needs to start in 27 with this 29 cliff coming on taxes. So our view is there's some work to do immediately here.
Yeah. As well, if there was one thing, Curtis, that if the governor called and said, look, we can only get one thing done in 2027, which would you choose?
The first page.
The first page. Very good.
Look, a lot of them are actionable. Yeah. And they're actionable quickly. And so we just hope that they get to work on them. We'd love to help.
Do you think everybody's got the appetite to do this? I mean, we talk about having pulled from red, blue states, purple states, whatever, just best practices. Do you think this can be a bipartisan effort in Salem?
We think it can. We're a bipartisan group.
We are.
We are not involved in any of the campaigns that are going on around the state. It's really about folks coming together for Oregon, regardless of their partisan bent.
Yeah. And this report just coming out today, this is Thursday morning that we're taping this, so it's just being released. I hope it gets good response. And is your work done now at this point?
We're chuckling.
Curtis is going fishing.
I'm going fishing. But we probably have more work to do.
We have some work to do.
We'd love to help.
Yeah. We're going to continue that.
Well, it was a busy 6 months. It's quite production for 6 months' time.
It was.
Yes.
Renee and Curtis, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, and thank you so much for joining us here on Straight Talk. A reminder, you can watch Straight Talk streaming right on your own schedule. Just download the free TV app, KGW Plus. It's available right now on Roku, Apple TV, and Fire TV. We'll see you back here next week.